work. So please welcome Dean Thompson.
So if you live in a parking lot out of your van for 100 days next to a state landmark like Morro Rock, you tend to meet a lot of interesting people. Now understand, I was not living in my van in a parking lot for 100 days because I was a homeless guy. I was a wildlife biologist, and as I always say, there's a fine line between the two. It was my job to be there. I was the nest site attendant for the peregrine falcons that nested on Morro Rock, and basically what my job consisted of was watching peregrine falcons. And when the falcons laid their eggs, then I would swing into action because those eggs were not gonna hatch. They were thin-shelled, contaminated by DDT, and if Mama Peregrine sat on them, it'd be scrambled eggs in the nest. So what we would do is we'd climb up to the top of Morro Rock, rope ourselves off, drop off the side of the rock, climb into the nest, take the eggs out of the nest, and here comes the tricky part, we would replace them with fake eggs, dummy eggs. And they, being bird brains, would just sit on the fake eggs. We took the real eggs, if they were okay, most of the time they weren't, they were pretty contaminated back then, we'd try and incubate them. And if we couldn't incubate them, then we would take captive-raised peregrine falcon chicks, climb back up to the top of the rock, rope ourselves off, drop off the side of the rock, climb into the nest, take the fake eggs out, put the chicks back in. Mama peregrine would fly in and go, oh my gosh, look, my eggs have hatched. By us doing that, the falcons were able to raise their own young and raise their young and release them out into the wild. By doing that and hack sites and other things, we were actually able to get the peregrine falcon numbers up, and now the peregrine falcon is off the endangered species list, which is kind of a cool thing. That year that I worked there was kind of cool because it was the first year that the peregrines were nesting on the south side of Morro Rock. Before that, 15 years before that, they had been on the west side. It was very hard to see their eyrie. And so when I saw where that eyrie was, it was really cool. I could see it really easily. So I told my supervisor I wanted to watch that eyrie. And he actually had plans for me to work in an eyrie up in Northern California in a remote wilderness site. And I convinced him to let me live in the parking lot instead. And he said, okay. And little did I know that that decision right there would have far-ranging implications in my life. I understand I was not alone while I was doing this. I had my buddy with me, Desmond, my dog. And I've told you about my dog before. He's a great dog, half Queensland Heeler. The other half was Border Collie, Australian Shepherd, black and white, no tail, patch over one eye, great dog. And when he was young, he was an amazing tool for trolling. I mean, I go along college campuses in downtown and troll with that dog, and there was a rare woman that could not resist the cuteness factor of that dog. Wonderful tool, and he actually retained those qualities when he got older as well, so it was kind of very useful in that regard. At the same time I was watching peregrine falcons that year, there was also a really unusual assemblage of sea otters that had congregated at the mouth of Morro Bay. And there was upwards of 15 to 25 otters that would raft up right inside the harbor entrance there. And it was the southern extent of their range, so they were mostly males, and there was a lot of people doing research with them. And biologists would actually swim underneath these otters with these big nets using bubbleless scuba gear and get up underneath them and creep up and catch one of them in the nets, and once they were caught in the net, they would take these little water weasels and sedate them and put colored tags between their toes so they could identify individuals. And some of them, they would actually implant radio transmitters inside their body cavities, and then that way they could track where the otters went, how deep they would dive, where they went, and stuff like that. So there was a lot of people working with otters there, biologists, photographers, Cal Poly students, things like that. So one morning I had checked on the peregrine falcons and they were incubating their dummy eggs, and I was walking around the rock and I happened to come over where the otters were, and there was a red pickup truck parked there. And I noticed that there were a couple of, looked like field biologist types sitting on the back of the pickup. They had scopes and binoculars. And the thing that, the kicker was they had a telemetry unit. And, you know, I had used telemetry units before. And the first thing I noticed was the telemetry unit. But then I noticed that operating the telemetry unit was a cute strawberry blonde girl. And so I walked up and I said, hey, nice telemetry unit. I know, it's great line, right? Okay, a line only a biologist would appreciate. And she looks at me and she's like, thanks. And then she looks down and she goes, hey, well, that's a really interesting dog. What kind of dog is he? And I'm like, yes, Desmond does it again, okay? So we talked for a while, but nothing really happens. And there was a guy that was with her, and I figured it was her boyfriend, and nothing happens. So a couple weeks later, the groundwork had already been laid, though. And a couple weeks later, the Cal Poly Vertebrate Field Zoology course came out, and I gave them a talk about peregrine falcons, and there was a number of cute girls in the class. And I ended my talk like I always do when there's cute girls in a audience. I said, you know, we can always use, you know, helpers to help save endangered species. You can come out and learn how to work with birds of prey and peregrine falcons. I'm happy to help you all out. Why don't you come on out, you know? And I didn't think much of it afterwards. And then a couple hours later, this red pickup truck pulls up, and out comes this strawberry blonde girl. And I'm like, yes, it worked. Okay. But she had no interest in the peregrine falcons. She sat her chair up and watched the sea otters instead. I didn't mind. We talked for a while. And then I told her, yeah, I got to go into San Luis Obispo. You want to go out to lunch? And she's like, that sounds really good. I was like, yes, this is working really well. So we went and had lunch in San Luis. And then after lunch, we're sitting there. I said, well, you know, you probably have like class you have to go to or homework you got to deal with, don't you? And she goes, no, I don't really have any plans. Alarm bells are going off in my head right now. She doesn't have plans. You got to figure out something to do, Dean. Come on, think. And I said, hey, you want to, you ever been up San Luis Mountain over there? She's like, where's that? I said, that one right there. She goes, oh, you mean Madonna Mountain? I said, no, it's Cerro San Luis Obispo. It's San Luis Mountain. She says, well, no, that sounds interesting. I'd like to go. So we had to stop by her dorm room first for her to change her clothes. And when we went into the dorm room, it was kind of a near disaster because I brought Desmond with me, and Desmond's really into balls. And there was a bowling ball in there, and he started attacking the bowling ball, and it was really cute. He was pushing it around with his nose and trying to grab it, and it went out into the lounge, and there were people out there that thought it was pretty funny. And then it started gaining speed and going down the hallway, and then it hit this door jamb and ricocheted right off to the right into another doorway. And everybody all at once kind of looked, and all of a sudden realized it was the stairwell. And now there's this bowling ball, bam, bam, going down the stairwell. The dog's chasing it, and I'm thinking, oh, great. I just destroyed her bowling ball and everything. But I look, and she had this big grin on her face. I was like, all right, this is working out well. So we climb up San Luis Mountain. And stupid me, instead of going up the normal trail of San Luis Mountain, I go up my favorite route, which is this rocky chute that goes up the north side, this bushwhacky climb that we go up there. And about halfway up, I'm going, Dean, you're an idiot. Because this is not what she was banking on, okay? But I look behind me, and she's right there on my heels, big grin on her face going up. I'm like, this is working out really, really well. Watch the sunset from the top of San Luis Mountain, walking down. I said, so what are your parents going to think when you tell them that you met this guy that lives in a van in a parking lot? She said, well, it doesn't really matter to me. Well, that was good. What a great day. Well, after that, we started seeing each other a little bit more. And then we went on an actual date, dinner and a movie. And she brought me back to my van. She drove, and she brought me back to the van where I had parked next to this house in San Luis. And I was like, well, you know, that was great, you know, great time, whatever. And I started to get out. She goes, wait, I need to give you something. She grabs me, and she gives me a kiss. Now, that was not the kiss that sealed with a kiss. And neither were the kisses that we shared in the park where our lips tasted like blackberries. Neither were the kisses that we shared at the end of the school year when she was leaving and I was leaving. I was going to Wyoming to release peregrine falcons, and she was going to go to the San Juan Islands and work on a killer whale film, a documentary. See, she met this photographer at Morro Rock who was photographing the sea otters, and he fed her this line. Well, you know, we can always use people to help with a killer whale film, and, you know, it's a great experience to work with marine mammals, and she fell for it. But you see, I had met that same photographer, and as luck would turns out, he had a house in Wyoming, and his house was right down the street from the trailhead where my release site was in the Bridger Teton Wilderness. So I got to know him, and I stopped by his house and talked with him, and he found out that I knew her, and we kind of had a relationship. And he left and went to the San Juan Islands, and he quickly realized that she was not interested in him and that she was interested in me. And so he generously paid her airfare, flew her out to Wyoming, and I picked her up at the Jackson Hole Airport. And we drove over to my release site and put our backpacks on and hiked off into the Bridger Teton Wilderness. And for the next 3 days, it was just her and I and the conifers and the meadows and the peregrine falcons I was keeping a very close eye on. And I think it was up there that there was probably a kiss or two that sealed our fates to be with each other for the rest of our lives. Thank you.